Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the Interim Dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work of my colleagues, and this season particularly our alumni in the fields of policy planning and health are doing. This 30th anniversary year for Blaustein, we are focusing on our alums and the contributions they are making here in the U.S. and around the world. Today, we're talking to one of the graduates from our world-ranked urban planning program. Gretchen Miniman-Kastura is a senior director at Amtrak. Welcome to the podcast, Gretchen.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm happy to be here with you and to share a little bit about Amtrak and what I've been doing since leaving Blaustein.
That's great. I love Amtrak. I just made some more Amtrak reservations about an hour ago.
So. We love to hear that. Thank you.
It was not in preparation for this podcast. It was just because I needed to go to Washington. So you've told me a little bit about how when you were at Blaustein, you were a community development person. That was what you studied. Can you tell me sort of how you got from there to Amtrak?
Sure. So like you said, I focused on community development and sort of affordable housing at Blaustein. And also my undergraduate degree is also in planning. And that always seemed to be where I was going to land. I ironically only took one transportation course while at Blaustein. And my mom tried to push me to take more. And I said, no, I have no interest in transportation. And yet here I am. So I think when it came time to graduate, and there were a lot of, you know, job fairs and network events with people, recent graduates, and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey has a strong connection to the Blaustein School and the Leadership Fellows Program that the Port Authority has. And so, you know, recent grads came back and talked about it, and I knew I was going to move to New York City once I graduated. And something about the program there, what the program really offered its fellows in terms of the ability to see and sort of touch and feel everything in this mega transportation organization. And that at the heart of the Port Authority's mission and also, you know, Amtrak's mission and a lot of these large transportation agencies is really moving people to the places they need to go, which, you know, I sort of justified in my mind, linked back to community development. And so I was at the Port Authority for a few years, did the Leadership Fellows Program, and then spent a few years after that program in the real estate department. And I focused a lot on planning and zoning studies, highest and best use analysis for new developments we wanted to undertake. And I also oversaw the local assistance program, which provided planning and other types of services to organizations in the communities where the Port Authority had facilities. So I sort of justified all of my actions in that I was still fulfilling this mission of community development just through a little bit of a different lens. And then in 2013, my husband and I moved to Washington, D.C. for he took a new job down here. And that's when I started working at Amtrak.
Gotcha. So one of the lessons sort of buried in there is that we really should always listen to our mothers, right?
She reminds me of that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. And you can use that as a parable for your children. So tell us about the positions you've held at Amtrak.
Sure. So when I started at Amtrak in 2013, I started working on the Washington Union Station capital program. And it's still ongoing. We have a series of near-term investments that we're making to provide additional capacity, flexibility in our operations, and modernization to our facilities for our passengers and our crews, as well as overseeing at that point, it was a $10 billion station expansion project, but, you know, escalation and COVID has driven that cost up to, I think the latest estimate is $15 billion station expansion project, which would really create a brand new neighborhood above the tracks in Washington, D.C., and sort of totally revamp and redo what we know of as Washington Union Station today. I oversaw that program for quite a few years, and then I moved to overseeing what we call the major stations portfolio at Amtrak. And so Washington is one of our major stations, along with New York, Penn, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Chicago. So I oversaw the teams at those stations doing the same type of capital planning, delivery, and project development that I did in Washington. And then about 6 months ago, I transitioned to the position I'm in now, which, as you mentioned, was Senior Director, Coordination and Special Projects in the Office of the CEO and President. And that is a lot to say, but in general, it is the Chief of Staff for our CEO, Stephen Gardner, and our President, Roger Harris.
That's great stuff, and definitely a lot of exciting things to be involved with. What are the biggest challenges facing Amtrak? Most of those stations you mentioned are right on the Northeast Corridor there, going from Boston down to Washington. You pass through New York, Philly, Baltimore, and Washington.
Yep.
And that's Amtrak's busiest route. I know I ride it all the time. What are the biggest challenges facing Amtrak on the Northeast Corridor?
Well, we have many. Some of our challenges, I think, are no different than other industries right now coming back from COVID. We definitely have a staffing shortage. Mm-hmm. So if you've ridden our trains, we do not have a ridership shortage, which is incredible.
Yeah, I noticed
that. We are almost back to pre-pandemic levels in terms of ridership. Which, you know, we are thrilled to see. However, it is outpacing our capacity at the moment. So we still have lower levels of staffing, which across the board means we can't run as many trains. We don't have as many, people on the trains to support our passengers. We don't have as many people in our mechanical department to get those trains on the railroad. So all of that, I think, is a huge challenge for us still, and something that in 2023, we hope to really come back from. Additionally, I mean, you've been on the corridor, so you know it's very old. A lot of our bridges and tunnels and other associated infrastructure is 100, maybe more than 100 years old. And so, you know, running a modern railroad on antiquated equipment and antiquated infrastructure is definitely a challenge and slows us down in places. And then I would say, other than that, you know, we do have old equipment that we're using. So one of the biggest things I think in 2023 you're going to see is the new Acela fleet start to hit the Northeast Corridor, which we have been waiting for a very long time. And we're also in the process of modernizing and updating the design for the new regionals, the intercity train sets, which will be out within the next, I'm going to say, few years. I'm not going to put a number to that one.
There you go. So with the personnel shortages, is that what we're seeing across the economy? Just they're not enough people who are looking for the kind of work that you need to fill positions for? Or is it, you know, that, are there other issues at play?
It's a few issues. I mean, it was very public that we furloughed people during the pandemic. So we were down in numbers, and then to create that, to fill that deficit and then build more. So we did hire, we hired more than 3,700 new employees, in 2022, which is incredible. That is like 10 times what we hire in a normal year. And we hope to hire more in 23. So we're digging out of the hole as well as trying to expand, both in terms of our capital capacity as well as our operational capacity.
It's always, you know, we've heard talk about expansion of passenger rail throughout this country for a long time, as long as I've been following public policy and those issues. Are there any prospects that we will see Amtrak operate elsewhere the way it operates in the Northeast Corridor?
I'm not sure it will operate in the way it operates to the capacity. You know, there's just, as we know,
right,
and we study the statistical area, right? There's just the density of people along the Northeast Corridor. But Amtrak was formed, and core to our mission is to be America's railroad. We really, you know, truly believe that that is what we need to be striving for. And, you know, we receive our money from Congress. And so they also want to make sure that we are the nation's railroad and not just the Northeast Corridor Railroad. And there's a lot that's going to happen, I think, on the national network. And the bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed a year ago, a huge chunk of that is to work to expand rail access across the country. And there's a program with the Federal Railroad Administration right now to sort of identify those areas that both have the demand and also the political will to want to work to build and plan for new routes. So I don't know if you've ever played the game Ticket to Ride, which is a railroad board game, but we play it in my house, and it is really like seeing the Ticket to Ride, you're building routes across the country. It's really like seeing it come to life here, I think, over the next few years.
Coincidentally, we went to a board game convention this past weekend, and my older son won his preliminary Ticket to Ride match and made it to the finals before coming in second in the finals. We are a Ticket to Ride family.
Well, sounds like there's a future for him at Amtrak then.
I will let him know that if this math thing doesn't work out. You talked about the infrastructure bill. Is there anything else in there besides the expansions that you talked about that really will impact Amtrak, or is that the focus of it?
Oh, no, that's a part of it. And really, that's, you know, the Federal Railroad Administration is going to lead the effort there in terms of the route expansion. But the infrastructure bill allows Amtrak to do capital work that we've just never had the money to do, basically. You know, it was $66 billion, although we always caveat that a lot of that is grant money, so we have to compete for that money. But just $66 billion for passenger rail is tremendous. And so when you go back to your previous question about, not just becoming a Northeast Corridor railroad, but a national railroad, I mean, that's at the heart of the infrastructure bill, is giving money to rail and making and showing that there is a huge demand and desire for rail in America, which I just think we haven't had this type of enthusiasm in decades. So to your initial question, yes, there's a lot that this will allow us to do. It allows us to get to a lot of the backlog and deferred maintenance that we have, again, mostly along the Northeast Corridor, because that's where we own most of the railroad. And it'll allow us to do those huge infrastructure projects that I talked about in the beginning. Gateway, obviously, everyone at Blaustein right. And in the New York, New Jersey area is very familiar with the need for additional capacity under the Hudson tunnels. There's also the East River Tunnel projects. There's the Connecticut River Bridge. There's the BNP Tunnel. So there's a lot that connects Washington to Boston that this money will allow us to actually not just have as sort of like a dream, but, you know, we've got planning, we've got procurements open right now to really start delivering on some of these. And all of that is really made available through the infrastructure bill.
That's great. Here's hoping that we really see the results of that in the next decade as it unfurls. Let me ask you,
Stuart, I'm glad you say decade, because a lot of people are wondering why nothing's happened. But it takes a long time, and we've been planning, but you can't move beyond planning until you know that money's going to be there. So it may be a decade, but change is coming.
Years of experience have taught me that to be modest in my expectations around timeframes, and even for issues that don't involve the expenditure of billions and billions of dollars. I know there are a lot of implementation challenges that lie ahead. And toward that end, sort of, can you talk a little bit about how your plan? You've used the word planning a fair number of times there. How did your planning education sort of? How do you see it play out in your day-to-day work?
Yeah, I think the planning, and you can always tell when you're working with like an engineer versus someone with a planning background versus someone with, I work with a lot of people that have finance degrees. And I think it's valuable to have all at the table. But for a lot of what I've done at Amtrak, especially with the stations, understanding and having a foundation in transit-oriented development and passenger experience and connecting the passenger to where they need to go, the urban realm, you know, all those type of like buzzwords, I think, really do matter. And it gives you a perspective that we're not just building a station, but we're building a network that allows people to get to where they need to go, as well as in many of these locations, these stations sit in the heart of the city. So how do we plan and develop in and around the station to improve the lives of those that live there, the lives of those that pass through there, that work there, all of that? And I think having a foundation in planning really helps to inform all of that process.
That's a great connection there. And now let's sort of flip that question a little bit and think about our current planning students and those that'll be entering next year. What advice would you give them?
Well, at the risk of having all of them reach out to me, I would say that, you know, one of the benefits of Blaustein especially is that it is so recognizable within the Northeast Corridor, where a lot of students are probably looking to locate once they're done. And there's a huge network of alumni. And, you know, I think we've all gotten to where we've gotten to because of the support of previous alumni. And so I really, you know, if there's someone that does something you're interested in, you know, reach out to them. That's how I ended up at the Port Authority. I talked to the person who was in the Leadership Fellow Program, who graduated the year before I did. And, you know, he sold it to me. And so I think that one of the huge benefits that all the students and young alumni have is that there's so many of us out there. And I think we all are willing to take time to help educate, I guess, on opportunities.
That is a fantastic wrap up to this season, actually, because our theme has been all the wonderful things our alumni are doing. And one of the reasons we wanted to highlight it, in addition to giving our platform to great alums like Gretchen, it was to let students know that, you know, there are a wide variety of career possibilities out there coming for people coming out of the Blaustein School. And there's a network out there that can help you think about whether those careers are right for you. So I didn't, you know that you would say that at the end, but boy, did you wrap things up in a way I could only have dreamed about there. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Gretchen.
Thank you so much, Stuart. I appreciated it.
A big thanks to Amy Cobb and Karen Olson, our production team, as well. We will be off for the holidays after this episode, and then we will be back next season. We are going to focus on our new faculty members, and there are a lot of them. So we've got some exciting episodes next season for you. Have a wonderful holiday season and stay safe.